Guys, yeah. Welcome back to the Merge Medical Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Brown, with my co-host, Dr. Jeff Cole. I am super stoked about our guest today, Dr. Rich Popwell. Hey, guys, we've all said, man, I got this patient in room so-and-so, and you're asking some other specialist about their area of expertise, and you say, hey, you know, it's not really like an official thing, but could you go take a look at this guy? I mean, we've all been there. I'm an anesthesiologist, so this happens to me frequently. Dr. Cole is an orthopedist. Well, Dr. Popwell, Rich, has got it. He's the CEO of Dockside, which is empowering healthcare professionals with a more connected curbside experience. Man, Rich, this might be the best podcast we've had yet. Tell us about it.
Hey, just really appreciate the opportunity to join you this afternoon. I'm currently sitting in Billings, Montana, which is the birthplace of Dockside. And so it's an absolute pleasure. So yeah, we're very excited about what we're building. You know, Dockside, its origin story in brief is basically a product of over 20 years of practicing as a neurologist, and then over more than a decade now of being a physician executive. And just like you said, Jeff, I mean, we've all experienced this. This happens a lot more than anybody could possibly imagine. It's kind of what happens behind the curtain of medicine. And a curbside is kind of inherent to what we do. And what I've realized over the years is, as we've sort of touched into value-based care, is that there's a hidden value within this work that we've done throughout our careers. And what's really interesting is that in the last few years, that value has started to be recognized by our federal government, by Medicare, by insurers, and no one's tapping into it. And so our goal is really to find the easiest path forward for us to be able to provide that value. And we do it all the time. And I think that it actually has a lot of potential, which we could talk about in more length. But Dockside its whole purpose is to make that as easy and as seamless as possible.
Right. And when we talked offline, you made it sound like it was like the Netflix of curbside consults. Like you've got
No, if you blend together the experiences that we have and all those apps that we know, right? So you take Netflix, you take Uber, you don't need to learn anything. You plug the thing on your phone and the next thing you're ready to go. And that's really what we're trying to achieve. I mean, we all know about how complicated our health record systems are. And honestly, they've done a horribly poor job on actually this level of communication. It doesn't have to be that difficult. And when you look into all of the modern technological things that have happened over the last just 5 to 10 years, as well as the regulatory and compliance changes and TECFA and qualified health information networks and et cetera, it really is time for us to start breaking down these barriers between us so that we can actually start talking to each other and actually helping our patients.
Excellent. So let's pretend I'm a general practitioner, nurse practitioner, family doc in Memphis, Tennessee, and I've got a patient that I just need a curbside consult. Walk us through that process.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, we'll go through current state. That family practice doc, they might need a specialist. Let's pick one, whatever it might be. Let's say it's a cardiologist, and they may or may not have a colleague that they could reach out to. But let's suppose they don't necessarily have that person. They just know, hey, I can get in touch with the local hospital and see who's on call for cardiology. Mm-hmm. And they, and so it's a cumbersome process, to say the least, there. They may or may not be on the same health record system. So there's that challenge. And before you know it, it's become very cumbersome, maybe hours, maybe days before they get a call back. Now let's fast forward to Dockside. If we build a network in that community and we have that primary care doctor as a user on our platform, and then we also have a cardiologist or group of cardiologists on the platform, as soon as that primary care provider puts in that question, it literally comes up and says, what is your clinical question? One box, tell me what you're trying to figure out. And they don't put any PHI in that. It's really just like a case-based question, mm-hmm. a couple of sentences if that. They have the ability, if they choose to put any relevant clinical information through like a HIPAA compliance screen capture. And they also have the ability to do a screen capture of the patient's billing sheet when they're actually entering the question, which is critical because the cardiologist won't be able to submit an insurance bill if they don't get that information. The other part is that there's some compliance and regulatory issues that surround the CPT codes that are associated with being able to bill for these types of services, and that's all been built into the app. So as soon as that primary care doc hits send, they can either select a single cardiologist, they can select cardiology in general within a geographic radius of where they are, and then it goes out into the internet on a secure server, because you have to be registered on our system to be able to do this. And then I'm a cardiologist and I happen to be, you know, hanging out, whatever, and I see this question pop up on my phone. Hey, there's a curbside if you want to take a look at it. Again, no PHI, it's just a question. And if I look at it and I go, hey, you know, I can answer that in probably less than 5 minutes, I click that question. And as soon as I accept it, much like that Uber driver that's going around looking for a ride, then that's when I get access to all of that PHI, the billable information. I can answer the question. And then the system is designed to allow me to quickly capture that charge. It's actually pre-built, auto-populate that charge. And then as soon as I sign it, the note goes right back to the person that asked the question. And then that note also can be routed to whatever system I want. And then a billing sheet charge sheet will be routed to my office for submission.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, Rich, I think the obvious question is just about the state in which the physician is licensed. Is that why you mentioned the geographic mm-hmm. location? Yeah. Is it limited to that, or does it break down state barriers, or how does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's our whole business model, is to actually leverage existing ecosystems, because that's where the work's being done. And we believe that's where the greatest value lies. And so, yeah, you're going to have to be licensed in the state where the patient is residing. So if I happen to be licensed in the state of Colorado and I have malpractice insurance in the state of Colorado, then I would be able to provide curbsides to patients in Colorado, even though I reside and I'm physically present in Billings, Montana. Right. So it's kind of that same applicable thing, to where the same rules apply to this as would apply to any telehealth solution, because we're actually generating a note and we're submitting a claim to that patient's insurance.
Does the patient have to be notified that there is this effort underway on their behalf? Because charges are going to be incurred. And I think with mm-hmm. telehealth, the patient knows at least that they're entering a situation where they'll be billed charges.
Yona, and that's actually been addressed by CMS when they first approved these codes in 2019. They actually had a little bit of a goofiness that they did when they first came out. CMS said that they wanted people to get consent every time that this was done, which is somewhat laborious it's not really practical. And so then in the Federal Register the next year, CMS came out and said, you know, annual consent for these services is totally appropriate. But because of the uncertainty surrounding that, what we've done is we've built into the app for the referring provider just to have an affirmative statement. They've actually told the patient, hey, I'm going to reach out to the cardiologist. And if I do that, you may or may not need to go see them. And if you don't need to go see them, there might be a slight bill, but it's not going to be anywhere near as much as if you actually had to go see them. And we'll get an answer back in hours or days versus weeks or months.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then since you're talking about the bill, what about insurance compatibility?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, when I first started looking at this, I was interested to see what Medicare was paying. And when I opened up the Medicare fee schedule, I was actually pretty surprised. The average reimbursement for what they're called interprofessional consultations, is what the actual terminology is by the CPT codes, is equivalent to a level 2 office visit. Mm-hmm. So the most common charge that's submitted for these is going to be something that is exactly to the penny the same reimbursement you get for a level 2 office visit. Now, the physician work component for that is 0.7 RVUs. And all of us know how much we love RVUs, but that adds up over time. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at this and you look at the average charge submissions that people are generating for this, irrespective of who's paying for it, and you can actually look this up through public information, you're going over $100 per unit of service for what people are submitting to insurers or Medicare or whatever it might be. And that 0.7 RVUs for CMS reimbursement is only the physician work component. It's not the global component. Average reimbursement for these from Medicare is only about $35-$36, which isn't insignificant. But then when you look at the average reimbursement for private payers, you're getting upwards of $60, $70, $80, sometimes even more than $100 per average curbside.
Gotcha. And there's no overhead tied to that, which probably makes it equivalent to a level three.
Right. Possible,
you know?
Well, I mean, there's that. I mean, when we look at, you know, the cost of what we're doing from our pricing model, we're going completely off the rails with regards to conventional software for medicine. You know, all of us know that, you know, you try to buy a piece of software for your practice and it's like, okay, drop down $10,000 or $15,000 minimum, if not more. We're literally trying to eliminate that and go strictly to a monthly subscription model where, you know, an independent practitioner, and it's one of the slides we have, if you're just a solo doc and you do two curbsides a month right now, and you were to get Dockside on your phone and you were to send Dockside out as an option for your referring base to send patients to you through these questions, you'd be able to generate upwards of $7,000 more per year for work you're already doing. And the cost of Dockside to you would be less than $600 for that whole year.
So you're charging the doctors a monthly subscription fee for access to the platform. Is that right?
Yeah. So right now, if you're an independent practitioner, we're targeting a price point that's actually cheaper than Netflix now. It's $9.99 a month. And if you're a referring doc, that's probably going to be the only cost you have. And that's really to help us with the setup in regards to credentialing issues we're going to have in the back end, making sure we can do all of our server cost. And then if you're a consulting doc, because you're the one that's most likely going to be able to submit charges, then in addition to that subscription fee, there'll be somewhere between $3.50, $4 plus per curbside. And that's where we generate higher volumes because they're actually going to be getting the check back from the insurance company. And we believe that this pricing model is incredibly attractive compared to other opportunities that lie in the software space for healthcare.
It does. When I see a question pop up, how do I know that I take that patient's insurance?
You know, that's an interesting question. And we don't necessarily have an answer for that at this time. That particular space from a health IT standpoint is quite challenging. And so, you know, if you don't take their insurance, it winds up being an out-of-network charge, but it isn't allowed charge. And so as a healthcare executive, you know, I've never seen a situation where a physician wound up getting a bill from something out of network and wasn't able to submit that charge. And granted, there might be some collections challenges, but I don't think that is a major challenge in most of the situations I'll be looking at. Now, if there's people have other thoughts on that, I'd love to hear them.
So these are payments coming in from the insurer, the patient's insurers. It's not like 1099 income coming in through Dockside.
Nope. No, we really looked at this and there are some competitors in this space. You know, there, you may have heard of a company called RubiconMD. RubiconMD was picked up by Oak Street Medical. They were acquired for over $100 million a couple of years ago. Oak Street Medical then got acquired by CVS for over, gosh, I think it was $11 or $12 billion. But they really focused on the Medicare Advantage situation. And when you look at RubiconMD, it's very interesting because they don't want to get into this space because they're really trying to contract directly with Medicare Advantage concepts for like a cost savings and a value-based concept, but they're keeping that to them. And, you know, the other spaces, there's Arista and there's Picasso, and they're essentially doing the same thing. What they're doing is they have sort of like their own medical group that they're forming so that virtually they can answer these questions. But the real issue is that who are these guys? I mean, I'm not saying that they're finding physicians that are competent, but I really like being able to ask questions to people that I know, that I trust, that are my colleagues in my community? And then what happens when, hey, that person really needs to be seen, and the question I'm answering, getting answered by somebody is across the country. It's just not possible. So I have to start all over. One of the functionalities that were built into Dockside is that if you're in a local network and you get a question and you're like, you know, that's not really appropriate for a curbside, but hey, by the way, if you're okay, I'll get that person in. So it serves as a referral generator as well.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a lot of common sense built into this, it feels like.
So
as physicians, I've always said that, you know, we've always been altruistic. You know, we give away so much.
Yeah.
And to the point that, you know, after everybody you can imagine just trying to get into our business and get into our pocket, it only makes sense to be able to charge appropriately for things that we do.
Right.
So I do like the concept.
So are you beyond prototype, or you actually got people using this and generating revenue, or where are you in that?
Yeah. So right now we are at high fidelity prototype is essentially complete, and we are probably 1 to 2 weeks away from a final development contract so that we can actually take this from a high fidelity prototype actually into a working solution, both on web and mobile. Depending on the developer that we go with, it's looking like that we have somewhere between an 8 to 16 week runway before we have our MVP and our launch. So we're very close to launch. We've already got a lot of pre-launch stuff under our belts from a standpoint of developing relationships for potential test sites or talking to a variety of different investors. So it's very close to us being able to actually show, look, this thing is working in a live environment with real docs, real situations. The prototypes that we've tested so far have been very well received by a variety of different specialists and primary care docs, with a lot of great feedback. And so we've gotten not only our product from a product market fit standpoint, but we also have some of these competitors, as well as what sparked all of this, which is almost 20 years of successful e-consultation in the VA at the LA County Department of Health. VA is now leveraging e-consults for 10% of their specialty work. Wow. LA County Department of Health is just bypassed, I think, a couple of years ago. Since 2012, they've now completed over 2 million e-consults. And that's before any of the CPT codes even became available. Mm-hmm. And wow. here's the ironic part of it is that when you look at the 2022 Medicare utilization data, there was only about 75,000 interprofessional consults submitted to Medicare Part B in 2022. Conservative estimates that we have from a formula that we came up with based on a variety of literature and my personal experience and surveys and so forth, is that leaves about 89 million of them being uncaptured per year.
Yeah, just barely scratching, yeah. Not even scratching the surface.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it's better healthcare if you can get an answer quickly, with less cost, with less resources. You know, some patients, it's just not that hard to get into the office for whatever reason. Is there any vetting on the specialists you're trying to attract, or do you just want to grow the largest network you can? I mean, how do you control that?
Yeah, I mean, we thought about this a fair amount, and while we are not forming a medical group or a virtual telehealth, you know, group, we really do feel somewhat obligated to make sure that, especially for independent practices, that we're doing some degree of credentialing background check. And so we've identified a third-party solution that'll allow us to do that pretty affordably, actually. And once we actually go into development, we're going to be working with them initially for launch from a cost standpoint. We're going to look at this from a manual per hit standpoint. But then as soon as we get into a volume situation where we have to automate that, to leverage some of these automatic credentialing pieces, like, okay, you said that you had a license and this was your license number. Are you really who you say you are? Are there any sanctions against you? And then we can plug that into our database and then re-up that on as much frequency as we want. We want to do once a month, once a quarter. So we're going to be doing due diligence for those people that sign up directly through the platform. But we're not going to incur that cost for organizations, hospitals, health systems that sign up with us because they've already done the work. So if they employ, you know, 100 docs, they've already done all their credentialing. That doesn't make any sense for us to have to repeat that process.
It just makes, this makes so much sense. It's just a really efficient way for physicians and nurse practitioners to communicate about their patients and to get reimbursed when you should for it.
Yeah, at Merge Medical, we have desires to grow a network of physician specialists who can help us look at particular private market opportunities, whether it be cardiology or GI or whatever. I just wonder if there's any way to kind of merge those two or make that opportunity available for people that are interested in being a specialist on your network, possibly, be one of those for us as well. I don't know.
I mean, we are not opposed to trying to provide as many opportunities as possible for providers or physicians and alike to be able to have a platform where they can actually have meaningful communication. And so, you know, once people register into DocSide, we'll be able to have, you know, a variety of different pathways to communicate with them via text, email, et cetera, right? And so we haven't even started to look at what that might be outside of the product that we're building. We've talked about it to some extent about what it might look like. But, you know, if we're able to make this thing go well, we think it's going to go, we're hoping that we'll have at least 100,000 physicians and nurse practitioners and mental health providers and therapists and so forth within the next 3 to 4 years on this platform. And that would be phenomenal to have an opportunity to say, okay, well, what else can we do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, our forum runs on software that can handle, you know, a million users. And, you know, we could co-brand that where your people would have a place where they could go and talk privately about the things that they're doing.
Looking at the total addressable market for this is from your pitch deck, $4.7 billion. So what really got my attention on this with Rich was, he's like, yeah, you know, you can be on vacation at the beach and, you know, you're just on having a nice cocktail or there with your wife and a little question could come up and you don't want to answer it, but later or the next day you're on the ride home, right? And you're in the car, you could just knock out 8-9 of these things and pay for a quarter of the trip, half the trip, right?
No, I mean, the reality is we actually built into a triage protocol. So if you see one and it says, hey, I don't need an answer right away, because we have three different triage categories on these, and you want to grab it, but you don't necessarily want to answer it right away, you absolutely, yeah, you're right on. You know, and there's so many times that we're idle and it might be, hey, I'm on standby for a case. And I don't know when I get called. And so instead of checking the news or my Instagram post, if I can answer like two or three of these in a half an hour, then I drop the insurance charges and that could be a couple of $100 if it's private payers.
And so, I could see Dr. Cole waiting on a case going, yeah, you know, that's not operative. I would recommend that just get followed up in the office, or I can look at an EKG and say, nah, this person's good for surgery or whatever. It's beautiful. So are you in a fundraise right now, Rich? Like, are y'all looking for funds?
Yeah, we are. And before I get into that, I'm actually going to expand upon what you just talked about with Dr. Cole. So Jeff, I got a question for you. As a practicing orthopedist, what is your conversion rate for patients that are new patients in your practice to surgical cases? Approximately.
Yeah, it's interesting. I go to different offices and they're actually they're different based on their locale. But it's probably maybe 1 in 5, 1 in 6 new patients, something like that.
Yeah. And so when I think about this and I think about ortho, I think about urology, because I oversee all these specialties in my leadership role in a large health system in the American West. And so, and I'm like, wow, I'm hearing that, you know, they're seeing a lot of patients that don't require surgery. Well, what if we were able to increase that conversion rate with something like this?
Yeah.
That would be meaningful.
The reality of our world these days is we make equal money in the office as we do in surgery. So it's almost 50-50. So
interesting.
So a guy can't just, at least in my world, and it might be different if someone has two or three nurse practitioners kind of working alongside them. It really kind of depends upon that. But for the most part, you know, when I see a patient, they ask, you know, are you going to do the surgery? And sometimes they're surprised. I'm like, of course I'm going to do the surgery. You know, you're seeing me, I'm going to be your surgeon. And I think that's a great model. Surgeons, we, you know, there's something about us. We like to fix things. I mean, quite frankly, that's when I'm happiest, when I'm in the OR fixing something. The other part is the rite of passage, right? It's, you know, I enjoy the office. I ask people about their job, their family. I really enjoy just learning about people and what they do in life. But no, yeah, if you could funnel more surgical patients to a surgeon, you're going to be a winner.
And sorry, I just wanted to follow up on that question. So yeah. So, Jeff, you were asking about this slide, which is the total addressable market, and eventually the SOM too. And so when we looked at this, all we did is we looked at the number of qualified healthcare professionals that have an NPI number in the United States. Mm-hmm. Because that really is what this is. If you can independently drop a charge for a service, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, any mental health professional, any therapist, physical, occupational, speech, and that's not all of them, but that's just a few, you can generate a curbside and you can respond to a curbside. So when we look at our financial projections for Dockside, the only curbsides that we looked at were those that were generated by primary care doctors, hospitalists, and ER doctors. We didn't look at any that were generated between specialists because there's not a lot of information about that, but they're done. We know they're done.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so we went down when we were doing our financial projections to, hey, look, you know, we're not going to think too big. We're going to keep this reasonable. If we could just touch 5% of the providers out there that are likely to be doing curbsides already, we would be a success from a financial standpoint. And that's just a very small percentage of that market of that 4.7 billion. Which is really based off of what we consider a conservative estimate of 90 million curbsides that are being conducted in the United States every year that currently are not being captured. Mm-hmm. So that number, 4.7 billion, does not include any consideration that curbsides might be used at a higher rate or a higher frequency if providers were actually made aware that it was a thing.
Well, tell us about the fundraise you're in.
Yeah, so right now we have a convertible note offering and we're contemplating expanding on that. The convertible note offering is looking at trying to raise an additional $1.1 to $1.4 million. If we wind up not hitting that, we definitely can still float. But that's with us looking at the first 12 plus months of operations, as well as the additional cost that we need to proceed with development. We've already put into invested $275,000 of our own capital. We have two physician investors, couples, each of them, that have invested $50,000 each. And then we're prepared in the next couple of weeks here to throw some additional money into the six-figure range personally. But we've got the convertible note. We believe that the offering is attractive right now. It is a 6.5% annual yield. And we are looking at a 36-month term. And then we have a couple of different attractive exits. So we have a $8 million pre-money valuation cap that triggers a conversion to stock. And that stock conversion comes in at a minimum of a 20% discount. If the valuation goes better than that, then the discount gets bigger. And then if we were somehow to have an acquisition within the time frame of that convertible note, then the investor would not only get that 6.5% on top of their initial principal investment, but we'd give them an additional 50% of that principal amount. And so when we did this, we worked with a legal firm that does a lot of startups that are pre-money valuations that, you know, trying to get an idea about how to really look at this. And now that we're getting to the point of getting into development and getting very close to launch, we're looking at opportunities for alternative investment strategies, really getting into what type of stock offerings and what that might look like from either an angel investment from a percentile standpoint.
Well, you mentioned as we were first getting on the call, working on a grant, like that kind of ties into capital. What can you say about that?
Yeah, literally just clicked the submit button this morning. And actually after this call, I'll be submitting another one. There's some very interesting grant opportunities out there for solutions that are like this, looking at improving access, reducing cost, improving healthcare equity, and so forth. And that we're hopeful after spending about a month and a half putting together the package, because I don't know if anybody out there has ever submitted a grant proposal, but I would rather fill out prior authorization forms all day long than ever do that again.
But investors love grants because in general they're non-dilutive. So
right,
go pile. Well,
that's
up,
the thing, right? Yeah. If the money's out there, try to go get it. And that's my attitude about it. So when we did this investigation about what those grant opportunities were, we have about two or three that really look like they have some potential. You never know. But if you don't take the time and effort to drop the application in there, you're never going to get the money. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about projected revenue, profitability projections, so forth.
Yeah. So if we look at our current projections, the first year, obviously, we're still going to be kind of flat. But then as we get into our second, third, and fourth years, we wind up becoming very quickly profitable. Our break-even point right now is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 18 months post-launch. And all these numbers are projected utilizing some assumptions. And the slide that we have there is really looking at about an 8.5% acquisition of the specialist in the United States. And that's a combination of independent specialists as well as employed specialists by hospitals and health systems. And we've calculated what we think is a reasonable number of curbsides per month using a proprietary model, financial projection model, because not all specialists are generating the same number of curbsides per month. And we start off with only about a 0.05% of those specialists in year one. And then every year we add 1 to 3% depending on the year, trying to get a hockey puck curve at the end of this. As far as the hospitals and the health systems, we're just looking at a 3% acquisition of independent hospitals and a 3% acquisition of independent health systems. And our financial projections are looking at a 50% curbside capture rate. We're not looking at getting all the curbsides. We don't think that's even reasonable. And then we already talked about our subscription model. So all in all, by 2028, if we are able to get just 70,000 providers on Dockside, and if we come close to hitting our targets, Dockside would generate over $40 million in revenue by 2028. With an expense of that year being somewhere in the ballpark of $15 million. So we would have a $25 million profit in 2028 when we consider all of our employee costs, all of our hosting costs, all of our software support costs, et cetera. And that again is using that subscription model and that low pricing structure. It's really about the sales and convincing people that this is a really important thing to do, mostly because we want to try to help people get that care that they need as soon as possible. And also because, hey, by the way, you've invested a lot of time and effort in your education and your training. And what's in between your ears is probably the biggest value in healthcare.
Right.
And like you said, we shouldn't be giving it away for free.
Right.
Are you familiar with a company called Sirmo?
I've heard of it. I'm not.
They have a network of over a million physicians, and to join their network, you have to drop your MPI. So it's a vetted network. I think it's global, but I think the U.S. component is I think over 500,000-600,000 physicians, and they basically service industry, if you will. So if pharma or you know, an implant manufacturer wants to put out a survey, they can put it out to this community, and that community, they make a little money by answering these surveys. I mean, this is somewhat similar, but I think it's more noble because we're helping patients, and answering, you know, real questions for patients. But if they can put a network of a million doctors together, you'd think, I mean, that's a big number, but you know, 70,000. Yeah. Why not?
All right.
Cause I think you've got the same drivers, right? You know, so you've got physicians who just want to make a little extra, you know, almost passive income, really. I mean, they're doing it in what they would consider their free time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hey, Rich, now Jeff Cole and I have done, I've lost count of the companies we've been involved with. The place where everybody gets stuck, right, is commercialization. And I've grown to understand that ideas are easy. Prototypes are pretty easy. Getting something started, maybe a little bit difficult, but the area where we see people fail is two places. One, and they're tied together probably, but fundraising and then widespread commercialization. And then, because if you don't, you know, this will never be something you're just going to do in Bozeman, Montana. Most likely, if you're going to be successful like you want, like you're going to have to really roll this out and have an economy of scale. And I see it. In fact, you know, Jeff Cole and I have a mutual friend that we'll call him a venture capital guy, but he's involved with Merge Medical peripherally. And he even said, you know, that's the power that Merge Medical has, is the collective consciousness. Now I see the value, but the question to that I want potential investors to hear on our platform is, how are you going to market this? How are you going to commercialize this? And how are you going to know that you're going to pull this off for people putting money into this?
No, and honestly, we actually had those conversations 18 to 24 months ago before we dumped a dime of our own money into Dockside. We started looking at a launch strategy as far as how we can wind up being successful as a business, probably much earlier than most people. So we have a fairly comprehensive business plan and launch strategy that we have ready to pull a trigger on, and I've already done a lot of groundwork on. So our current strategy is to start off with approaching regional private practices, independent practices, where we believe that their decision-making will be much more nimble. And I can say that with a fair degree of confidence because I work for a really large health system where decision-making is never nimble. But it does happen. It takes time, right? How many levels of approval do you need? But if I go to a private practitioner group and I say, hey guys, look, I can get you guys up and running in less than a week with Dockside. You can send out, we'll actually help you draft and communication to tell all your referring providers that you're going to be offering this service. And then we can then get all of those providers to get together. And that'll just be, let's say it's Billings, Montana. Okay. All we need is one ecosystem in a handful of states to demonstrate proof of concept. And then we wind up having enough traction to really go the big side, is to go back to the venture people at the health systems or the health systems themselves. So we've already met with two major health systems in the Western United States to discuss this opportunity on their venture capital side. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, you know, they could fund the whole thing by snapping their fingers, but they have restrictions in the way they do things. And their bull is, you got to have revenue. You got to show it actually works for what you're actually doing, right? Which is very common. We're totally fine with that. And so we're going to start off with those practices that we can bring real value into on a smaller basis. We have multiple markets. I'm based in Montana. I've been in Montana for now 14 years. I know a lot of people in the state, and so we are fairly confident that we'll be able to get are beta testers there and then very early adapters. And some of those even include smaller medical groups at health systems in the state of Montana. And then we have a lot of contacts throughout my networks and friends' networks, a lot of places throughout the Mountain West, Colorado, Idaho, Utah for sure. And then also in the Southeast. I grew up in the Southeast. And of course, then we have Merge Medical. So, I mean, you know, we have, and as far as getting the word out, anybody who is a practicing physician that's interested in Doxide, once we're launched, we would love to have the opportunity to basically introduce Doxide to them and for them to start using it in their practice. So we believe that our strategy is reasonable. We're not looking to sign a major health system or a hospital until probably after about 12 months or so of launch. And then we're going to start working on those independent hospitals and then move very quickly into trying to sign bigger health systems. And as far as our team, we are a small team because we're pre-launch, we're pre-revenue right now. I have a comprehensive understanding of healthcare, both from the medicine side as well as the administrative side. And then my wife is our president. She's really our horsepower for all the operations stuff. Carlina has been, she's a force to be reckoned with. Once she gets her mind put to something, both from our family as well as anything else. And so she has a master's in poli-sci. She's a Texas A&M girl, so she's an Aggie. If there's anybody on the podcast that's UT, I'll just have to tell you, I'm sorry. And, but, you know, she's done work in philanthropy. She's done work in fundraising for Catholic healthcare initiatives. She's done work in oncology drug development at a major cancer firm all before we became a family. And then the last several years, she's been focusing all our time up until recently when we started off on Doxide. And then the third part of it is that this is a family affair. So just full transparency, my son, who just got out of Arizona State with a degree in finance and entrepreneurship, he's our first full-time employee. And my other son, who's working on finance over Florida State, he's our half part-time employee right now. And then on top of all of that, from a standpoint of implementation, we've intermittently and continue to contract with fractional executives. So right now we have a fractional chief technical officer that we're working with that has previously been the chief information officer for Cedars-Sinai. Guy is phenomenal. He has a great deal of experience. And all of our projections financially have been customized with either a chief financial officer on a fractional basis. Right now, we're working with a guy that is helping us out. And he used to be a CFO for a startup here in Montana who we got connected with him from a really reputable resource. And he's been doing great work for us. So we have some momentum as far as our operations team. And as soon as we wind up having a product, as soon as we have to, we'll wind up expanding a customer success team as far as account managers, Salesforce, et cetera. And in our technical side, from a commercialization standpoint, we're being very careful about which partners we pick for development, not only to just give us a product, but how do we wind up making sure that there is hardly any time when this thing isn't working and make sure all the back end is bomb-proof from a security standpoint. So we're really taking time to vet that wisely because that could be a disaster very early if we don't take care of that.
Rich, is this your first business?
This is my first entrepreneurial adventure, yes. Not my first business. I was a part-time owner of a medical practice when I was in the Front Range of Colorado for a brief period of time. But I got a bug on this a few years ago when I first learned about this opportunity with the CPT codes and Medicare reimbursing for this work. I actually successfully stood up a smaller version of this in my previous employer using Epic as a platform. And the challenge that I faced there was that it was very easy for, you know, my providers that were on my version of Epic. Mm-hmm. But there was no way for any of the people that were in the rural areas or the underserved areas and all those docs that are, you know, solo docs in a community of a couple of thousand people, they don't have Epic. They have paper, or they have some other type of system, right? And we all know that there really isn't a great way for people to communicate between these disparate health systems and their records. Mm-hmm. And so the proof of concept for that was that I was able to successfully build that in my leadership role in one institution. I've now begun that work in the current system that I'm in, also in Epic. but it's still only on Epic. There's no external way for the providers to actually plug into Epic and really leverage this. So that leaves a wasteland of people that are in communities that are not on those platforms. And even if they are on Epic, if you're on two different versions of Epic, you still can't send a staff message to a person on another version of Epic. So we're trying to bridge that gap with something that just ignores all those barriers and says, look, if you're on our platform, anybody that has a license and who's got malpractice insurance, they can register, whether it be through their employer or whether it be through their own practice. And that way we can actually level that access and that equity. Because I see patients, this past week, I saw a patient that flew 4 hours to see me from far northeastern Montana for something that honestly I could have taken care of in a curbside in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's just, that doesn't have to happen.
Yeah. Well, I could see so many people wanting to use this. You know, anybody that's done any kind of medical legal consulting, any entrepreneurial minded physician, anybody that's got downtime that they want to maximize, it just makes total sense. You know, we like to have people on that check mark the three boxes, you know, help patients, help physicians do their jobs, and then at least give us the opportunity to enrich ourselves financially. Certainly check mark all the boxes. We're closing in on close to an hour. Is there anything that topic that we didn't talk about? Jeff Cole, anything that you wanted to ask, or Rich, anything you wanted to discuss?
No, I mean, you mentioned, you know, I mean, some physicians do medical legal work. You know, personally, I just like keeping it purely clinical. So,
I guess the point I'm making is
Rich is doing, because
yeah, you could plug this in instead of doing medical legal, you could do just clinical.
It's just a way to do what you do, you know, and just do it when it's convenient and helpful to patients. And you know, I'm just trying to think this through, because I'm part of a 40, you know, almost a 40 man practice, and there's another practice in town that's similar in size. You know, I feel like if our practice, if we rolled this out, we'd have a competitive advantage.
You would, yeah. But doesn't this make so much sense? I mean, the synergy with our group, and we've got, how many subscribers are on our Substack now?
2,500.
You know, I mean, I would think a great portion of those would go, hey, man, this is pretty cool. When I'm waiting on a case or I'm waiting on whatever, it's like you said, it's just maximizing that downtime. What's the minimum investment that you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going big. If I can get somebody who wants to throw $5,000 into a convertible note, I mean, literally, if I had 100 docs that were all wanting to just throw $5,000 at this, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And if we had one that wanted to throw $500,000, that would be even better, right? But
yeah,
you know, we're not going too big. We really want to make this something where physicians can be a part of it. I would love nothing better than not to have to go to a single venture capital person or health system or anybody and literally be able to say that DocSide was 100% in supported by practicing physicians.
Yeah.
That would really mean a lot. You know, and so
you did a really good job naming this thing, and it's just awesome what you're doing. Since we didn't talk about it on the phone before we recorded this, we, as Jeff Cole and I, were not advisors. We just direct people to what we think are compelling things. So that would be something for DocSide to do, as far as like know your investor, their accreditation status, that sort of
thing. Yeah, no, we actually have a accredited investor form that's attached to our convertible note. Our convertible note was constructed by a firm that's got a pretty high level of recognition for healthcare startups on the East Coast. And since we've moved on and we actually got selected by Cooley as one of their pet projects, I guess you could call it. And Cooley's huge. So they're an international law firm, but we were pointed to them from a friend of ours who was a chief operating officer for another health tech company that actually was quite successful here in Montana. And when we introduced this to Cooley, they were like, you know, this has some legs on it. And so they granted us a line of credit, essentially, without risk, up to a certain cap. you know, it's really nice to be able to have them review our design and have them in our back pocket, especially if we need to go to the table with a large health system in the future. We have a variety of different other firms, including a local firm here in Montana, that we use for things like, hey, look at this master services agreement or so forth. Yeah, the legal part of it gets really interesting very quickly.
This is honestly, this is one of the best projects I've looked at. And if you've perused the website, I don't know how many of these we've even looked at now, but it's been quite a few. This is the one of the most promising, at least for the where you are in the stage of development. It's been really good. Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Is that okay? Or unless there's something
else? Yeah, I think we're good. I think it's a wrap.
Excellent. This has been a great podcast with Dr. Rich Popwell, CEO of Dockside. Guys, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Brown, with my co-host, Dr. Jeff Cole. It's been a great hour at the Merge Medical Podcast. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.